Trust. Now, we've got several people here from the Trust, so I'm not sure who's going to lead, or are we going to fight about it? Silence. So who's leading on this for the Trust, please?
That's Maggie.
It's Maggie. We want Maggie.
John, I think Maggie was planning to introduce, but she's having some technical issues, so I'm just going to pop into her office and see if we can fix it. If you bear with me a second.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know Teams can be a bit trying at times.
Chair, if we aren't able to get Maggie, Gary, I can have me introduce.
Yeah.
Start.
Well, do you want to start, Darren, while we're all sat here anyway?
I think so. Can I just check whether we've shared any slides?
Slides? No.
They were circulated with the papers, paper C.
Yeah.
With the papers, yes.
Paper C, Chairman.
Paper C.
Great people, great place.
Yeah, that's the one, Michael. Yeah, that's exactly what Councillor Lee. Yes.
I've got a presentation to share, if you want me to share that. I thought you were having a break, so I'm just getting
well,
it
an
up
unofficial,
now.
Unofficial.
Do you want me to share it as I did just now?
Yes, please.
Sure, yeah.
Unofficial break. But carry on, yes, please.
So just bear with me.
Sarah, she's not.
Right. Unfortunately, Maggie's microphone won't go off mute. So it looks like you're leading on this then, Darren. Or what about if Kirk's there? Can't Maggie come in on Kirk's microphone?
Shall we go, Chairman, just with the printed copy while we're still rectifying?
Okay.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, it's working, Maggie.
Right, good, right. Welcome, Maggie.
Hello.
Yeah, we can all hear you.
Apologies, I don't know why. I never normally have any problems with MS Teams. I'm not going to labour about our slides. I'm really pleased that we've been able to attend this evening scrutiny meeting, and I've brought a variety of colleagues with me, more importantly to answer your questions in the most detailed way that we're able. I'm going to take it as read that you have had the opportunity to see the slides, because I know they went out with the packs for you. So without further ado, I'm going to pass to members of my team who will introduce themselves and give you a flavour of the work that they've been doing and our contribution, but I'm very conscious that the value for us will be in your questions, not repeating the slides that you've already read. So, Claire, can I hand to you, please?
Thank you, Maggie. Chair. So, good evening. My name is Claire Gowland. I'm the Deputy Chief Operating Officer, and I'm standing in for Smith, who's our Chief Operating Officer. So, following on from Maggie, we'll take the slides as read, but I just want to refer to them as I go through. So, responding to COVID has taken a tremendous effort from NHS staff. I think that's probably taken as read. Staff have been incredibly agile and responsive, not only dealing with the initial impact of COVID, but also the continuation of adjusting to varying scenarios. So the challenge has been to remain responsive to the threat of COVID, whilst also making sure that we focus our energies and actions on an effective recovery. The introduction of social distancing, infection prevention and control measures, as well as the changes in our demand have impacted on performance, but we can go through that in a little bit more detail as I go through. In terms of our operational performance, referring back to slide 4 in the pack, accident and emergency, in terms of our emergency 4-hour exercise standard, in July we saw 95% of our patients admitted or discharged within 4 hours, and that was the third consecutive month. Towards the end of July, we started to see quite an increase in activity again in the number of patients who were coming through to the ED, and that was sustained throughout August. In terms of referral to treatment, that's been our most challenging area, and it's the combination of actually making sure that patients are seen in outpatients, they have their diagnostics, and also they go on to definitive treatment. In line with the national picture, this remains a challenge, but it's something that we've got a number of actions that we're working towards. Cancer and diagnostics, whilst having a significant impact during the initial COVID phase, started to see some recoveries, definitely last month and again this month too. In terms of the weekly attendances to ED, there was a significant change, and I'm taking you on to the next slide if it's there in your pack in front of you. The bottom graph will show you that by the end of July, we were at, less of pre-COVID levels in terms of ED attendances. The shift in the types of presentations coming through the front door were quite marked as well. So we have seen an increase in drug and alcohol-related attendances, in trauma, and in non-COVID respiratory. The hot spell also brought in cardiac and stroke-related attendances as well, which had another impact on what we were able to deliver. If I just tell you one of the key messages from the first week of August, we had an average of over 140 trauma-related attendances over 3 weeks from July into August. That's a 50% average of 50% increase on the pre-COVID average. Drug and alcohol, we were seeing about a 36% increase. In terms of diagnostics, as you would expect, April and May saw a significant reduction in our ability to manage the number of patients who were requiring MRI scans, CT scans, and other diagnostic imaging. That has started to recover, and actually we were back up to about 77-78% in July, having dipped just under 42% in April, so a good recovery. 3 points in terms of our ambulance service. So if I break it down into three different areas, first is the category 1, 2, 3, and 4 response times. We saw a dip in July, and most of that was around the shift in, or the increase in category 1 and 2 responses. So these are your 999 calls and your high acuity calls. The category 3 and 4 were achieved, and they were the lower acuity patients. In terms of 111 call handling, again, we've seen quite a shift over a period of time. First of all, with a significant increase in calls to the 111 centre. Some of the performance was impacted upon, we weren't answering all our own calls, it was going into a national call centre and being redistributed as well, but we're starting to see improvements there. And the other is the patient transport services. So the biggest impact there was because of social distancing. So again, we ended up with single occupancy vehicles for very obvious reasons. We are now able to make a risk assessment, and for a number of journeys, we are able to put two appropriate patients back into the same vehicle. So that started to have an improvement in how we manage our patient transport services. I'm going to hand over, and I don't know if you want to take questions at the end or as we go through.
Let's do them at the end.
Yeah, hand over to Chris Ainsworth from Mental Health Services.
Thanks, Claire. So we should be on slide number 8. So I'm Chris Ainsworth. I'm the Deputy Director for Mental Health and Learning Disabilities and the Head of Psychology and Allied Health Professionals. As kind of Claire mentioned, we've seen a kind of huge response from the Mental Health and Learning Disability team during the COVID period, and they've demonstrated real kind of flexibility in ensuring that kind of services continue and we can continue to meet the needs of the kind of local community. Our kind of activity rates have largely been maintained, and that's through the use of kind of virtual technology and offering remote appointments. We're seeing some referrals now, increase in referrals across the system, and we're kind of putting in additional resources to be able to meet that. So we're kind of anticipating that there will be a surge in mental health referrals as a result of COVID, and the kind of figures that people are talking about are between 20% and 30%. The integrated mental health hub, which we put in place during the COVID period, have been really successful, and that's why we've been able to work with some of our system partners to be kind of co-located and deliver services from one place. We're going to maintain that integrated hub, and that will be part of our mental health service going forward. But that's been a real kind of positive and a real success. And overall, the kind of performance has been really high in some services, so IAP and EIP have been able to maintain their target despite everything that we've had to deal with for the COVID period. And so I'm going to hand over to Alice, who will talk for the next slide on community.
Thank you, Chris. So I think we've talked a lot around community and the community provision in the wider system, but this is a specific slide for the NHS Community Division. And I think it's probably just worth mentioning that in July, we saw an increase in activity, and often people don't realise the quantity of contacts we're having per month. You can see in this slide, it went up from 13,421 in June to 14,347. That's across the whole of the division. So we do have a huge number of contacts with people in their own home, either receiving reablement, rehab, or community nursing. Those are just a few of the services. We do have a small community unit that you can see is mentioned there. The bed occupancy was lower because we didn't have all the beds open, because we had spare beds, we had empty beds in the acute, and we also had empty beds within care home provision. But I think for the community unit, one of the things we're really keen on is that people are enabled to go home to their own environments, and we are using some data by ULIS, who are working through a few key performance indicators. And actually, it's really important that patients are working towards home, and 97% of patients were up, out and dressed every day when they were within the community unit, and that meant that their average length of stay was lower, but they were also able to return to their original destination, which has been quite a change for us within the community. Integrated discharge, Jim, I won't talk about, because I know that Mark has already spoken eloquently about how we speeded up the process for discharge within the island, so I'm happy to take the next slide. The next slide is for me with my Director of Nursing hat on, and apologies, I realise now I didn't introduce myself. So Alice Webb is the Director of Nursing, Midwifery, AHPs and Community Services. Previous slide was Director of Community Services, this one is as Director of Nursing for the organisation. So part of the process that we're going through at the moment is around the quality improvements that we want to undertake within the whole organisation, and clearly that's going to make a difference to our island population. As a result of CQC, when they came in and have done their visits, we've been working towards a plan, and what we are stepping up since COVID is how we're reporting this and managing the process of quality improvement. I won't read the slides, but you can see here what we're asking each of the divisions to do is to identify what their key improvements have been month on month, so that we've got evidence of it. And again, many people have spoken about that as we've gone through the presentations. Next slide, please. What we also get people to do within the divisions is to not only look at what they have done, but look at what they are going to be doing. And then the following month, we'll check and just confirm that some of those improvements have been made. So as you can see here, we're absolutely looking across the organisation to confirm that we continue to deliver the high quality care that we want to and that we aspire to. And I think it's really easy just to pick out a few points. I would go to the community. I'll start from the left hand back to the community where we talk about technology enabled care. We have really, really stepped up over the COVID period the technology enabled care that we have delivered, both within the NHS but also into the wider section, and have worked really collaboratively with our care home providers to ensure that we can deliver technology enabled care, whether it be teleswallowing, ordinary observations, telepodiatry, but really, really capitalising on that. And we're certainly working with our acute colleagues now around Attend Anywhere and having virtual appointments, which has been really successful, and patients have really enjoyed it. As part of that also, we've worked with safeguarding, and we are delivering a number of sessions around safeguarding for our younger clients who absolutely love technology. They are far better, they always say, ask a teenager, and they are engaging much more proactively with some of that. If we move to the next slide, please. Just to summarise, really, we are hoping that the CQC will come in and see the improvements that we've made. We don't have a date for them to come, and they are changing nationally. They're changing as a response to COVID, the way in which they inspect and will review a trust. So we continue to have dedicated quality improvement, communications support is in place, and it's going to be really important that some of this we focus on the successes we've had. And I would have to say that those successes are absolutely as a result of some of the integrated way in which we're working, both with our local authority and with the CCG primary care networks, in really looking at how we sustainably deliver care across the system. Thank you.
My name is Nikki Turner, I'm the Director of Transformation. I'm just going to walk you through a few slides on partnerships that are with our colleagues, mainland trusts. Just wanted to say that during the COVID period, we did find that we had some partnerships that did pause, others that continued working. And I'll give that give you a bit of a flavour of that. Give you a flavour of that through the ambulance partnership. Could you go to the next slide for me, Kirk? Right, so if you look on the right hand side, you will actually see, and you mentioned earlier, Claire talked about the fact that we have improved our ambulance performance. If you actually compare 2018 to 2020, there is a significant improvement across all our categories, all our performance. So what I would say is that the ambulance partnership is quite a mature partnership, and certainly during COVID, what we actually found was we continued that partnership to the point where actually, as an island, we were supporting SCAS. We asked them actually, what can we do to help? How can we help you? We actually invested in a number of additional call handlers on the Isle of Wight, which was fantastic. And they have been and will continue to support, not only through the COVID period, but certainly within winter. One of our key focuses with the ambulance service has been the improvements around our IT, our infrastructure. And what we've done is align us, our IT systems with SCAS. You would have heard in the past, 12 months ago, we talked about the 999 CAD and rolling that out. That's the computer aided dispatch system. We're actually in the phase of actually rolling out SCAS's PTS version as well. And what that will enable us to do is actually plan not only our mainland transfers, but also transfers back to the island. And we aim to actually smooth, I suppose, our assessment and our moving of patients between our partners to make it as smooth as possible. What I'd also say is you've probably seen through some of our presentations to Trust Board is our wider partnerships. You mentioned Hover Travel and the absolutely outstanding work during the COVID period, and the fact that we can still and are transferring patients off island through that route, and our mainland partners, i.e. South Central Ambulance Service, are picking our patients up. What that means to the island is actually we get our staff back onto the island, and we're able to deploy those ambulances far quicker than we would have been we've actually taken completely off the island for several hours a day. If we can move on, Kirk, to the acute partnership. So this is one that did pause, but what I would, what I've been really, really pleased to see is actually in the last probably 6 to 8 weeks how quickly we've picked back up. The really, really important thing around this partnership is the learning that's come out of COVID for both partners and the fact that we have actually taken that forward together and said, actually, do we need to do anything differently? How do we work across our population of 800,000? What are we going to do differently? And during that period, we have actually developed a joint clinical strategy, and our focus is going to be around core emergency services over the next 12 months. I think, John, you might have had a question around our relationship with Portsmouth and how that's benefited us. What I would say in particular is, whether it's this partnership or other partnerships, it's really about how we plan services together, how we look at actually the fact that the wider NHS ourselves have significant challenges to tackle and how we do that together. You've heard from us in the past around recruitment and retention being a challenge. We are certainly looking with our partners to say, how do we do that jointly together? How do we look at joint posts? And we know that we have a new joint chair with Portsmouth in place. So we are looking at recruiting together. We have looked at how we train together, how we develop posts together. And we've had really positive feedback during the COVID period around support, particularly for specialist advice out of hours, which has been excellent with our partners in Portsmouth. We're also looking at how we develop our skills long term and how we look at that training. Do we create new posts as well? So it's quite an exciting period of time moving forward for us. If we could have the next slide, I'm just going to pass over to Chris, who you heard from earlier, just to talk about the mental health partnership.
Thanks, Nikki. So the mental health and learning disability partnership with Solent remains really strong. And just last week, we had a live event which was really positive and really well attended, with over 80, a mixture of kind of service users and stakeholders, where we talked about the kind of partnership and some of the transformation work that we've put in place over the last few months. And we're working with Solent and other local system partners on redesigning the service, and with a new model which is emerging based on the philosophy of no wrong door. And this has, again, had significant engagement with users of our service and other stakeholders as well. The new model is going to be about locality working, with more complex presentations being coordinated centrally, but still being delivered island-wide where possible. And the integrated model will kind of strengthen the community services and reduce the reliance on inpatient care. So the partnership with Solent, with the CCG, with primary care, and with the third sector are all coming together to help develop and to deliver the next phase of this transformation. If we move on to the next slide for the community, thank you.
Alice, would you like to pick up?
Certainly can do so, thank you. This is in its infancy compared to the other partnerships, but we have done a partnership prospectus that has now gone out to providers to look at getting a strategic partner for us. The expressions of interest will be all due in today, and I think it's fair to say that we're making progress with it, but we are not as advanced as the other areas, but I'm happy to take any questions towards the end regarding that.
Thank you, Alice. So we're just going to hand over now to Darren about investing in our future.
Thanks, Nikki. So we've got a couple of slides in here. I'm really pleased and really excited to be here this evening in front of the Health Over and Scrutiny Committee to talk about something we're calling Investing in Our Future. And those of you that are aware, we received approval to spend up to £48 million on delivering our strategy. So central government funding through the Department of Health and the Treasury
in investing in the delivery of our strategy. So our partnership, as others have talked about, our strategy rather, as others have talked about, are partnerships. We have some emerging and existing partnerships, not least of which on the island. And that £48 million is going to be focused on a few things. I'll talk about those in briefly now. Investing in the improvements in St Mary's, investing in our community to improve the experience and make much more of our existing and future resources. Developments over at Portsmouth in terms of a population that travel for complex clinical activity. And really importantly, and it's been touched on a few times already this evening, is an investment in our digital platform. So that's our infrastructure as well as the clinical systems that support our clinicians when they're receiving and providing care. And devices. So Alice has talked about our technology enabled care in our care homes and other care community settings. So it's devices as well. And we're all used to using technology, aren't we? But we don't always do that particularly well in either health or even potentially other parts of the system. So what are we going to do? The next slide, which you can see there, how are we going to spend that money? On the St Mary's site, emergency care floor, so co-locating all our emergency services, so there's a seamless pathway for patients to not only improve both the care but the experience whilst they're with us, and also an integrated high dependency unit, so that will also co-locate our ITU as well as that HDU. I won't go through all of those, other than picking up perhaps a couple of others. The community health and wellbeing hubs, really, really important for Ireland, integrated services. We've all talked about how we've worked together really well, and we need to continue to do that. And having an investment in those community health and wellbeing hubs is going to be critically important for us. And I won't go through digital and ambulance integration. The last slide is for you governance people out there. And what are we going to do quite quickly? There's a whole process here that we'll need to go through. And what I would propose through you, Chairman, is that I and others come back on a regular basis to update on where we are and what we're doing and investing in our community. This is about investing in our community and our acute and other services to improve our patient care, our offering, and the experience of patients. But it will be quite a long programme. It will take up to 3.5 years to complete. So by 2024, this programme will be complete. I'm conscious that there are bound to be lots of questions from that, but really exciting and really, really a good opportunity for us to work together going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, this is a million miles from the NHS Trust of just a short time ago. It's really fantastic and so positive. I'm so impressed, Nikki, with your ability to anticipate my questions. I really don't know how you managed to get into my head like that. But or maybe I'm just too familiar with all those trust meetings that I attended. And on that point, it's just, I think this committee would like to formally thank and appreciate Vaughan Thomas, who's retiring on the 4th of October, for the excellent chairmanship he's conducted for the trust. I think that what Vaughan has achieved is quite remarkable, and I've certainly learned an awful lot from him, and will continue to do so from my few conversations with him and the way I've observed him operate. So can we take that as a formal vote of appreciation from the committee for Vaughan's excellent work? We got.
I second that.
Thank you, Michael. Now we've got a couple of people who would like to ask questions, and the first one is Joanna.
Hi, thank you. So it's more of a very quick comment, really. So we've been pretty challenging historically around mental health services, but I'd just like to say I attended the live event last week, and and I've spoken to people that use services, and the changes that are planned are really impressive, and the huge amount of work that's been done around mental health services, which was sorely needed, has been impressive, and much of it is focused around talking to patients, talking to people that have used services historically, and that is clearly evidenced in the plans, because particularly the rehab plans are really, really innovative, and they're actually giving people and patients what they want in order to get better and have a recovery from mental health. So, yeah, just a really positive comment, and I'd like to say that I'm really impressed so far with the plans for mental health, and the fact that you've worked so hard at talking to service users and patients, and I really hope this continues.
Thank you, Joanna. Kirk informs me that there are actually some more slides,
yeah.
So sorry about that, Kirk, so carry on, please, and then we'll go to Michael.
Thank you so much. And this is really just, as it says, about our recovery and our way forward. So looking at both outpatients, inpatients, diagnostics, and actually how we manage to continue our responsiveness to COVID, but also recover our services. It's fair to say that there's been an increase in waiting time for outpatients appointments, but there's some really good progress that's being made. It's going to take some time to clear the backlog. The most important thing is that we communicate with our patients, that we make sure that they understand exactly that they haven't been forgotten, what the options are for them, and the timescales involved. So that work is ongoing. We continue to increase the use of virtual outpatients appointments. We've got a main outpatients department that's now reopened, which means that we've been able to expand our waiting areas to allow for social distancing and a very clear one-way system and new drop-off and parking. And we're at 91% of normal activity levels in outpatients at the moment, and that continues to increase. We can go to the next slide, please. This takes us through to our inpatients and day surgery. And we know that in line with so many organisations that there will be some people that will wait more than 12 months for their procedure. Obviously, we feel that as much as those out in the community do as well. We are assuring all our patients that people are going to be prioritised by clinical order, and those lists are constantly reviewed by clinicians to ensure that we are responsive to those in most need. We've undertaken a review on all patients with extended waiting times. And as we've said before, the three biggest impacts really are the social distancing, the infection prevention and control measures, and also maintaining the COVID and the non-COVID flows that have impacted significantly on how we do things. The use of the independent sector is going to be an important part of our recovery process as well. Next slide, please. Diagnostics, the routine scanning was suspended across the country, and you can imagine the sort of impact that caused for us. Direct referrals from GP reduced considerably. They've started to pick up now, and we have significant backlogs for MRI, CT, and ultrasound. We're back to pre-COVID levels at referrals now. Scanning capacity is similar to theatres in the way that it's been impacted on through the infection control measures and the flows, as I said earlier. And then we continue to manage the backlogs and keep in touch with our patients to ensure that they know exactly what's happening in terms of waiting times. If you just go on to the final slide. So our current capacity sits at approximately 80% across theatres, endoscopy, CT, and MRI. And that just gives a breakdown of those different areas and tells you or explains a little bit more about where we've blocked, where we've had the impact on activity capacity. And the last one. So very briefly, use of the private sector is key. Extending our theatre days will help provide some additional capacity and reduce our waiting times. There's potential to bring in clinical teams also to operate in our theatres over the weekend, which will help us to create some additional capacity. Potential for a third MRI scanner in January 2021 to enable the backlog to be cleared by March, and also a third CT scanner potentially November 20th is the aim, and again by the end of the financial year we would look to be clearing the backlog of CT scanning as well. The most important takeaway I think from this is that we are in constant communication with our patients, and prioritisation is absolutely key to them. Last slide,
thank you, Claire. It is the last slide, and then we'll be very happy to take questions. And John, you alluded to this already. I just wanted to update members on our chair. So, focus slides, sorry. I wanted to update you on the appointment of our chair. Vaughan Thomas, as you've outlined, John has now will be stepping down on the 4th of October. He was appointed for a 3-year tenure, which is up on that date, and he's always made it known that he would not be renewing or asking to renew that appointment. So I again echo your kind words, John, around the thanks that I would like to place on record for the support that Vaughan has given us. We said some of this at our trust board last week, the challenge and the determination to see our services improve has been driven by our chair, and I'm really grateful for the support that he's given us all. NHS England and Improvement are responsible for the appointment of chair. Some of you will remember the process from when Eve Richardson left us and Vaughan was appointed. They've been through their appointments process, and they confirmed a few weeks ago now that Melanie Poole will be taking over as the Trust new chair, and her start date is October the 5th. As I've said in the slide, Melanie's got very extensive NHS leadership experience, and we are all looking forward to her joining us. Melanie will also continue as the chair of Portsmouth Hospital Trust, and she will chair both of the boards. But our boards will remain as sovereign organisations. I feel it's very good news for the partnership, for the acute partnership with Portsmouth, as it obviously with Melanie being over the two trusts, she will be able to ensure that as much as it's my number one priority to ensure that our acute services have a bigger NHS organisation to work with, I do feel that we will also have the support from Melanie as well to help drive some of the changes that we need to make. So that's all of the conclusion of our slides, John, and we're all very happy to take questions.
Yes, Maggie, and also to note that my comments on in appreciation of the board are echoed from other partners present at this meeting as well. So, Michael, you're next in line. You had a question. You have to take your mute off, yeah?
I've got a proposal at the end of this.
Yes.
I would like to actually go on the back of what Joanna has said and actually say, as you know, I've always been a very strong advocate of mental health, and I haven't been frightened to come forward with very strong criticism. I actually do see on the ground that there is a move in the right direction in mental health, and I would like to officially say that. I am going to put forward a proposal to suggest that there is a separate informal meeting with the Scrutiny Committee on Mental Health, because we've had them before. We've had special working groups on this, on suicide prevention. So I think it would be a good opportunity with yourself and the CCG to, I think, get updated and to see how we can support, you know, to go forward. But I do wish to say it's been an overall excellent report, and I've seen on the ground that there's a sign, particularly with my involvement with the Isle of Wight Youth Trust. I think that the partnership and collaboration work with the NHS Trust, with Barnardo's is the way forward, and I'm glad that we can actually start to see some very, very positive dialogues coming forward. I would like to highlight on your report, page C17, which is on the mental health, that you actually do make about locality teams. And I would like to highlight that at the beginning of this meeting, you got the report from the voluntary sector and how the community response of 26 community response teams in the localities worked incredibly well and actually were working with your mental health hubs in actually providing telephone support at first level and escalating up. And I just think that, can you add that to your, when you're getting the localities, that actually take advantage of the development of those community hubs at level, and also the participation of town and parish councils, who are actually in a better position to fund local activity than actually the Isle of Wight Council is in a lot of ways. So, and they also tap into obviously lottery money and other sources of funding. So I think that there is a discussion there that comes out of actually the work that has been done. My last particular comment is to highlight about hover travel. I am a Ryde councillor, I'm the mayor of Ryde, and I have seen for myself the terrific work with the NHS Trust and hover travel, and I was glad that you publicly raised that, and I wish that we can minute that hover travel went beyond the line of duty in lots of ways in working with your teams. And as one of the operators who didn't stop their services right through, I do think we need to note that, and I think there's a good partnership there in the future.
Yeah, good. Thanks,
you. Michael. May I, John? I've put some comments in the chat box, but
yes,
the feedback from Councillor Lilly is very much appreciated. Again, I'd say you have challenged and encouraged and supported us throughout the last few years, and we may have had very difficult conversations several years ago, but your support has meant a lot to us. We will be delighted to attend a mental health and learning disabilities specific meeting. And I also just want to echo the comments that you've made about hover travel. They have been really superb in the way that they have worked with us, and they have made a great difference to many of our island residents in the way that they've been able to offer us transport to the mainland. So I know that Dr. Stevens, if she was with us this evening, unfortunately she wasn't able to attend, she would have been delighted to hear your comments, and I'm sure Chris will feed them back for us.
Yes, please send her my best wishes.
Great, great. Thank you for that. And Michael is, as somebody once described, an ex-professional pro, if ever there was one. So thank you for that. We've got Andrew wants to ask a question now.
Thank you, Chair. First comment, I very much look forward, that now I'm a member of your committee, for supporting the work, as somebody referred to, about the importance of the governance structures that need to be developed to oversee this, to be that critical chat friend who, and challenging to make sure that things are indeed on track and exploring those reasons why not. One particular question I do have, and I may have missed it, but these virtual calls are sometimes difficult to kind of make sure you've heard everything, but under the mitigation, it refers to a number of the plans requiring financial approval, and currently those are being considered. What's plan B? What sort of impact does it have if some of these plans don't get financial approval that's being sought?
Darren, do you want to answer that?
Thank you, Maggie. Really good question there, Andrew. We took a paper to our trust board last week, and the board were unanimous in their decision, which is our patient comes first, and therefore we decided that we would need to invest that money, and we would potentially
have a difficult conversation with our regulators about the financial impact of that, as opposed to worry about not being able to treat the patient. Good. So our plan B is a difficult conversation with our regulators.
Right.
I think
thank you.
If I could also, Andrew, again, I think it is a really good question, and no doubt in the future we will, our Ofcom particularly, and ask for your support. We believe we're doing, our board agreed last week on Thursday that we're doing all of the right things for our community. As we've outlined in some of the slides that we've presented earlier this evening, we were instructed by the government and by NHSE and I to take certain action during the course of the first wave. No doubt if we get into a wave two, we will be instructed to do things then. Without a doubt, it's impacted on those who are waiting for elective treatments, and many of our elective treatments go on to be of a serious nature. We're very, very conscious of that, and we know that the actions that we've agreed at Trust Board will alleviate some of the long waits that have now built up during the course of the spring and early summer. Undoubtedly, it will affect our financial position, but I think rather, I know that some of the councillors who've been on this committee a long time felt that our predecessors weren't very upfront and transparent around the deterioration of our finances. Undoubtedly, if we do not get financial support from our regulators, we will have to carry some of these costs ourselves. And I would like in future months to be able to say to you, we prepared you for the risk that doing what we believe is doing the right thing may have a negative impact on our financial position as we get through the winter and into next spring.
Thank you, Maggie.
Right.
Just before you put your proposal, Michael, which was again a very worthy one, was it a question you wanted to ask, Michael?
I just wanted to ask Maggie, we talked about a letter regarding testing and using our authority as a scrutiny committee previously. I would like to ask Maggie, would a letter of support from this scrutiny committee to your regulators, highlighting that we as a scrutiny committee feel that you are in the right direction and that we would very much support the need to continue the funding or the funding without, perhaps you could help us with the wording, Maggie, but would you value that?
I mean, I think it would be helpful, and I think that we could work with perhaps John and Darren. John, it's difficult when you're on MS Teams. I couldn't see if you were on the Trust Board with us last week, but I know you will have heard some of the discussions around what we need to do. But perhaps Darren could work with you, John, on some words that would be very supportive and helpful.
Yes. I think that's an excellent idea. I'm not sure that we need to go to the vote on that, because I think anything to support. Heads nodding. Now Andrew wanted to ask another question. Andrew.
Yes, if I may, Chair. There's been a lot of commentary, of course, about the hidden impacts of what the pandemic's done, and that we'll all be seeing diseases and conditions emerging in states that are worse than they may have been. Had there been no pandemic and people just going through the health system in the usual way. Just wondering what work has been done on the kind of horizon scanning of that. So what is going to need to be needed in place potentially 5 to 10 years from now to deal with this cohort of people who have been coming through potentially with much more serious conditions than they might otherwise have had.
So if I'll kick us off, but it may be that Claire and Alice and Chris want to say something. If I kick us off with, I was on a call with our National Director for Mental Health and Learning Disabilities, Claire Murdoch, a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that Claire has tasked us with doing is looking from a mental health perspective to see what activity did we stop seeing during the COVID wave one because we were restricting access to services, and what requests are we seeing now? So does it match? This is what we would have expected to see if we hadn't had wave one, or have we got a growth that's more significant than that? And that will help us from a mental health perspective answer that question when we've had the opportunity to look at some of that data. I think, again, in relation to your question in relation to acute services, we know, and you know, you may have heard me when I went on the radio a few times, and I've certainly said it here at this forum, we encourage people throughout the pandemic, wave one, to still come forward if they needed our emergency treatments. But we were cited on several instances of people being at home for too long with cardiac symptoms and with the early symptoms of cancer. Now, again, we await to see what the all of, when we open the gates, as Claire's described, with bringing more of the diagnostic and outpatients work in, we will again be able to answer some of those questions. But Claire, Alice and Chris, I don't know if you'd like to add anything to that.
Darren?
I don't know whether Simon, apologies. Can everybody hear me? Sorry.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I don't know whether Simon's still with us, but I think it's a fantastic question for the longer term view from a public health perspective, not perhaps for this evening, but as we move forward, Andrew, that's where we should be heading. So what are the needs in 5 or 10 years' time that we can plan now to respond to that? I don't think we can do it justice this evening, but it's a great question. We'll need to come back to it.
Yeah, okay. So Mark Howell, you wanted to ask a question. Where's Mark?
Yes, I did. It's really, I suppose it's a question and endorsement, really. I've already mentioned it on the chat, but I think it's not to forget, I suppose, that there are already a lot of things in place with the COVID-19 has almost transformed a lot of things that we've done in a collaborative manner. And I think that what I would say in terms of the wellbeing hub, which is amazing, we could get those hubs established in different parts of the island. We've got the barracks, and we've got Ride as well, health centre. We're looking at placing, we've already got social workers in those areas as an integrated offer with mental health, but also with therapy, with district nursing, linking it into primary care. But also, let's not forget the police, let's not forget fire, it is a real opportunity. What I'm saying, I suppose, Darren, is that we've already been building that. So this is an opportunity. And listening to these plans and these potential investments gives us a real opportunity for the people on this island. And that's the bit that counts for me, making that difference. So this is very good news that I'm hearing.
Thank you for that, Mark. Now, before we move to Michael's proposal, it would be remiss not to raise a question that is inevitably on many people's minds, as it often is when it concerns the Isle of Wight and our unique position. And that is, Maggie, what assurance can you give to people that are suspicious and raise these sort of questions that the new association with Portsmouth is not some ploy to sell us down the river and have the Isle of Wight taken over? It might sound a little bit silly and flippant, but it is a very real question from certain people, and it comes up time and time again whenever we're faced with partnering with the mainland.
Thank you. Thanks, John. And I just take this opportunity to be really clear, in case I wasn't when I mentioned this earlier. I want to say, firstly, this is not a joint chair over bringing two trusts together. This is a chair that will be chair of Portsmouth Trust and chair of the Isle of Wight NHS Trust. We will continue to have our sovereign boards. I will remain as chief exec here on the Isle of Wight, and my colleague Mark Cogan will remain as the chief exec over Portsmouth. And all the colleagues that are here on this meeting tonight will continue in their posts. It will give us the opportunity to work, as I have spoken here before about the partnership model. Came from our health and care plan, and you will know that we're 18 months into the delivery of that plan. I'm not going to repeat here tonight all of the reasons why we three leaders, three organisations came to the conclusion that we needed to have partner organisations to support us. But they're all around the place we were when I first came here 3.5 years ago. I'll remind you, we had 9 services inadequate for patient safety when I first got here. It was a very dire place for us to be. When we did our own analysis, that's the local authority, ourselves and the CCG, we were clear that many of our problems stemmed from the scale and the size of the services that we were on. I've given you before the example of Arsterboom, for example, the special care baby unit. Very proud of the improvements that they've made there, but often there are no babies in that unit, partly because of the improvements that we've made to maternal health, but also partly because of the age demographic of our island. We still carry the overheads for that unit 24/7, and we still have to ensure that the staff receive adequate training and exposure to the most serious of conditions that our newborn babies might face. So we do need to ensure that we've got an NHS partner that we can work with to shore foot all of our services. Now I'm going to pass to Nikki, because somebody else asked Nikki this question very recently, and I thought she answered it extremely well. So Nikki, I know you explained this in a very simple way the other day, so over to you. You're on mute, Nikki.
That's it.
No. You're there, Nikki, now.
Am I now?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, so it's saying on mute. I'm on mute, so apologies. I think my computer's confused. Thank you, Maggie, for saying said that so eloquently. I think the important thing for us is the fact that we have a huge opportunity to look at population size of 800,000, to look at creating joint services, which means that we can, for example, stroke is a really good example. We know on the island that we struggle with trying to recruit staff, but we know if we work collaboratively together, we can actually produce some fantastic models of care for our patients that not only just serve the Isle of Wight, but serve our Portsmouth colleagues as well. So there's lots of opportunity for us here, and I think through the partnerships, it's not just about one partnership here, and I do hear you, John, talking about Portsmouth, but actually it's the working of those partnerships across. So if I give the example of transferring patients, I mentioned hover travel earlier, I think that actually we have to work not only with Portsmouth, we have to work with SCAS as well to make sure actually we do timely transfers and we use the best of all of our resources and don't find ourselves in a situation where we have our patients or our staff actually spending more time on the mainland than actually on the island where we actually need them. I don't know if you wanted to add anything further, Maggie.
No, only to repeat really what I've said. We will continue to have the Isle of Wight NHS Trust here on the island. We will work differently with our partners. Now, if I refer you back to the health and care plan, I can't remember which page it was on, but we did say in the health and care plan back 18 months ago that we would have to see what was the success of the partnerships, what could they deliver, and what further work we would need to do with them. We agreed at our trust board last week that we would now, our executive team will start to, with the ICP colleagues, look at what the health and care plan needs to look like in years 4 and 5 and onwards, and we will update you if we feel that there is any developments with the partnerships.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, and I'm sure John and others, you will get to meet Melanie if you haven't done already, but she's joining us to drive the improvements that we need to make, not because she sees the Isle of Wight NHS Trust disappearing anytime soon or even ever in the future.
Yeah, so I don't think you have to convince anybody here, Maggie, but nevertheless, you know, out on the street, it is a real fear that that could quite easily be allayed. And I just wondered if I might suggest that with the ever capable Kirk, we could look at some sort of form of very simple, clear communication, notifying people of the benefits and of the new arrangements and why they shouldn't be frightened of it. So on that, let's go to Michael's proposal.
Just before I make my proposal, John, I'd like to come on that and particularly say I'm a particular councillor, it's quite island-centric, quite often. What we want is the best for our community and our residents. And the reality in the past was because of recruitment and expertise, right? We needed a relationship with a level of something that Portsmouth provides that's linked to, you know, a university hospital, linked to a university, that can provide at a day's notice or an hour's notice the high level of expertise to actually make them well again, right? Much more efficiently. And I therefore welcome that we have that partnership now and full, because from a health scrutiny point of view, we want the best for residents. And I think this is a practical move that provides that. Mm-hmm. So I fully support it. My proposal is, Chair, as I wish to make the following proposal. The Health Scrutiny Committee thanks all the Isle of Wight Trust for their dedication and hard work through the COVID crisis. And we particularly highlight thanks to Hover Travel and their close working with the Isle of Wight NHS. And in regard to mental health, I propose an informal meeting with the Trust and CCG to get an update on the mental health and look at some of the data and the information that Councillor Garrett raised, particularly around trauma and also suicide prevention within that. So that's my proposal. May I have a seconder?
Seconder, George, and can we get
George,
to the vote?
Yes, Chair, if we can include learning difficulties.
Okay,
yeah.
Mental health and learning difficulties, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay,
yep.
Megan.
Okay, Councillor Cameron.
George, you're going to say yes.
Yes.
That was
yeah.
a yes, but he's on mute.
Yes.
Councillor Garrett.
Andrew.
Yes.
Councillor Howe.
John. John Howe, Councillor Howe. Your vote, please.
Okay, we might have lost John. Councillor Lilly.
Four.
And Councillor Nicholson.
Four. Yeah, John was bound to vote for it as well. So, thank you very much for a really informative session there and some good outcomes. So, last but by far not least is the CCG. Alison.
Hello there. Apologies, you didn't get a presentation from us. I had a few difficulties
last week,
so I couldn't get that done. I thought I'd just pick up on some of the questions and start with the voluntary one, as we had queries about that or an update about that earlier. Currently, the CCG holds 17 contracts for voluntary services. Sorry, I'm not quite sure what's going on. If I could ask people to go on mute so we don't get the feedback, would that be helpful?
Yes.
So I can continue. So we currently hold 17 contracts with voluntary sector across the island. And of course, we've been very supportive of the action.